hopefully, unless y'all open up and make it strong, make it longer, it's going to be brief, is actually something. And again, remember, all the stuff we're doing is stuff that I would use in counseling. And it actually is some awesome stuff. It makes a lot of sense. It'll help you when you're trying to help somebody else. And like we did with grieving cycle, we did it with mourning, we did it with suicide, we did all this stuff, and now we're into identities. And so you can really learn a lot and understand it. Have you ever had somebody say they flip or switch? I mean, they're happy and everything's going good, and then you go, who in the world is this? Okay, that can be momentary, or that can last for weeks. It can last for months. It can last for years. Okay, so we're gonna try to just go into some of this. This is not an all-inclusive, everything, all your answers, everything you want to know about identity crisis. This is just going to help you out a little bit, all right? What is your real identity? What is an identity? That's what we answered last week. Is identity something you were born with? Is it changeable or never able to change? And as we discussed last week, you're born with part of it. Part of you is genetic. Another part of you is a blank slate. Right, a blank slate can get changed by your situation you're in, who you're around. Do you know that you're going to be like the five people you hang out with? Okay, those five people will help shape your identity. If you hang around with a bunch of hard heads, you hang around with a bunch of people that want to fight all the time, you're going to want to fight. You know, they even said, I was listening to some marriage counseling stuff, and it said, you know, usually couples you look at a couple and they're talking about getting a divorce, ask them of the five couples that know how many of them are getting a divorce. And so you hang around people that say a divorce is not an option, then you'll say divorce is not an option. Same way, who you hang around with has a lot to do with that blank slate, plus things that happen in your life. I said, if a cat ever sits on a hot stove, he'll never sit on any stove again. He won't sit on a cold stove. So things that happen to you that will shape you and change you. So you get part of you is genetic, and part of it is the blank slate, and you put them together and you get your identity. Now, it is changeable. That's the cool thing. It is changeable. If you work at it, if you understand it, if you realize it, you can work on it. And you can change the way you are. And I've seen some people like that. I used to work with a guy from West Point. He was my boss. At West Point, he was a captain from West Point. He was the hardest man I ever had to work with in my life. Because no matter what happened, there's no excuse. And I said, this is not an excuse. This is a reason. This is why the machine was not put up last night, why it was not fixed. Because my boss, the boss in between me and you, told me that we didn't have time to fix it. We had to get some other stuff done, so I couldn't be there to fix it. And now he's mad at me because it weren't fixed. I couldn't do it. I asked somebody, my boss, immediate boss, said, no, we're going over here and take care of this stuff. It's more important. So he comes in and jumps on me and says, there's no excuse. Well, after years, he started getting in with some good people, some good leaders, getting some good leadership training. Although West Point's got good leadership, man, I'm not saying it doesn't. But he went from that, there's no excuse, until he became one of the greatest leaders I've ever worked with. I loved working with him. Once he got into some right kind of training and with the right kind of people versus some of these hard folks that, no excuse. So, and that, what's an identity crisis? Now, this is kind of a mature subject, but I'm pretty sure that we're all mature. Amen? At least we all look like it anyway. Okay? An identity crisis is a period of difficult transition. The two times it happens the most is in adolescence or midlife. And like you were talking about that girl, she's trying to figure out what's going on. She's an adolescent, and she's trying to figure out because now the hormones are rushing in her body. She's starting to feel like a woman, and at the same time, her brain is computing information different. It's accepting stuff different. It's figuring stuff out different. And instead of that 5-year-old going, why is the moon? Why is the moon red, Dad? Why? Now they're forming their opinions. And so here's your deal. So again, adolescent and midlife. A guy across the street from me years ago, he drove up in a Vette. He drove a Corvette up. He was 50-something years old and drove up a 77 Corvette. I looked over at him and I said, what do you do? He said, he was a deacon in the church. And he said, well, I've always wanted one. Well, I got me a Corvette, which is fine. But all I kept seeing was the red flag. You're 50 years old. And here comes a red Corvette. Not like your children were growing up and it was just something you want to do. His children were still growing. And so I found out a few months later that he even got out of church. He was no longer a deacon. He was out, you know, so what happened was he was in a midlife crisis. Again, it's a difficult transition. You're trying to figure out who you are. You're going, an adolescent is going to go from a child to an adult. They're trying to figure out who they are. And so there's that fight within their psyche. And somebody, usually women are in their 40s. Guys are in their 40s and 50s. 30s to 40s for women, 40s to 50s for men. But adolescent, midlife, and it's when the visible, I'm asleep when I'm writing some of this stuff. Severely conflicts with the real you. Causing the visible you severely conflicts with the real you. Think about this. The visible you. Here's all our visible yous. We all look around. Y'all, here's your visible you. All right? Your visible you actually conflicts with the real you or the you you're trying to become. That's why it's all used in a transition is when the identity crisis takes place. And here it goes. It causes pain, distress, and the desire for change. Watch this. Who am I? What do I believe in? What values should I live by? Wow, this is people, some of the prayer requests and some of the things I've been dealing with over the last couple of weeks. This is right down the alley. What do I want to do with my life? And in Proverbs 15:21, it says, folly delights a man who lacks judgment, but a man of understanding keeps a straight course. And I was just going to read a few different versions of that. Folly is pleasure to him who is without heart and sense, but a man of understanding walks uprightly, making straight his course. I like this one. An empty-headed. An empty-headed treat life as a plaything, the perceptive grasp its meaning and make a go for it. So here we go. Here we go. Proverbs 23:7. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. The problem is your heart's divided. And you're trying to figure this out. The Bible says in James that a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. That word double-minded literally means they have two spirits. And also have a heart and a heart. And so it's during this transition, when you're going from one to the other, you kind of like, I remember when I was a teenager, and I remember I would get in there with some of the older kids, and I went out like I was a big boy. I was a teenager like the rest of them. They had driver's license and all this. I'm 13 years old, standing like I was somebody. But then when the 10-year-olds were playing, I was out there playing with them. And it was just a difficult transition trying to go back and forth from them. And so here we are. An identity crisis is a period of severe disillusionment. Disillusionment when the identity is based on a role or relationship that's been changed or moved. And when I'm counseling people, I can hit this. When I hit this, I mean, it's just like, here we go. And usually when this happens, what we just talked about, the grievance cycle. This is when the grievance cycle comes in. And the grievance cycle, if the grievance cycle is not handled correctly, an identity crisis will step in. So here it is, the loss of a job. When people lose their job, their identity was in your career. If you have an identity crisis because you lost a job, your identity was in your career. It was a role. That's why I don't tell people. When they say, you're Republican, Democrat, I'll say, no, I'm a Christian. Or they say, well, are you conservative or you're liberal? Well, definitely conservative. But I don't label me because some of the Democrats, some of the Republicans I see, I actually don't want to be identified. Yeah. And so, but again, I've seen people, they lose their job, and once they lose their job, all of a sudden, they become so empty and in their own mind worthless and useless, they find themselves reaching out. And they're reaching out in this identity crisis, and it is tearing them apart. They don't understand. My job does not make me. I'm not trying to, my job is not who I am. I am a child of God. I belong to Him. And when things happen, I'm going to have to trust God that He's got this under control. He's got everything. I was telling somebody just the other day, they were talking about they were getting ready to change jobs because it was so stressful. And they said, but what if it doesn't work? And I said, well, let me just tell you a little story. I was at Fountain Power Boats working in engineering. And my boss, the engineer manager, came to me and said, I need you to learn these other engineers' job. I said, I don't want to learn their job. I'm having a harder time keeping up with my stuff. And he said, no, I want you to learn all their jobs. I said, okay. And about a week or two later, he called me and said, the reason I asked you to learn their jobs is because the supervisor for this department is going out for 8 weeks, and you're going to be the supervisor of this department. It's okay. And so I did. I learned everybody's job, and I was supervised for 8 weeks. The supervisor came back, and went back doing my job. Well, this person got sick again, so she went out for another 8 weeks. So they called back in, and they said, they need you to be supervisor again. Catch up on all their jobs. And I said, okay. About the seventh week out of eight, they come in and said, you're actually going to be the new supervisor. I didn't want it. But my wife liked it because I was going to get like a $2 an hour raise. Yeah, get it, son, get it. And so they come in and tell me all this stuff that was going to happen. They painted me all this story, painted all this picture. And the next day when that person came back to work, they called me in and said, after they gave it to me, took it away. Because the supervisor raised so much steam. They took it away from me. Some took away my $2 an hour raise, took away the job, and some back over my department. And my wife's furious, and I'm thinking, I don't know what's going on, God, but I'm going to trust you. A month later, Big Boss moved to sales, and they called me in the office, the COO, and said, guess who's going to be the new manager? I said, who? He said, you. And so instead of a $1 or $2 raise, I got a $5 raise. And I got to be the boss of the supervisor. Not pleasant. Not pleasant at all. What I was going to say is, though, you see, God had bigger plans. And so I didn't understand that. Now, I could have gone in all this identity stuff, but instead I said, wait a minute. Fountain Power Boats is not my identity. My identity, I'm a child of God. God's got this. I'm in His control. He's got my life under control. I'm going to trust Him. And instead of me getting all bent out of shape because I was given the job and pulled away, I just kept rejoicing in Him and kept doing my job and love my job and love the people and just kept having a good time. And next thing I know, I'm in charge of the whole department. Kind of like Rebecca. She fed all those camels, watered all those camels. And she didn't know the next day she was going to own all those camels. She could have said, I don't need to go water all these camels. It took, 8 hours? No. She did that, and she winds up owning the camels the next day. So again, that's how you got to watch this thing. So, and Ruth, she's out there gleaning in the field to protect or provide for her mother-in-law. And she goes out there and doesn't know that pretty soon she's going to own the field. So again, don't let your job become your identity. Yes, I'm a pastor. I'm a counselor. But you know what? That's not my identity. My identity is David Linton, child of God. Amen? Y'all got to remember that. Your identity is child of God. All right? Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. Now watch this. The loss of a spouse due to death or divorce. If you start having that identity crisis or you get disillusioned, it's because your identity was in your marriage partner or was in a relationship. I lost my wife. She died. But you know what? I got angry at God a little bit. I have to admit, I got angry just a little bit. But I trusted Him enough to know that He's got this. He's got it. So, again, if all of a sudden you feel useless, empty, You can't do a thing about it. And all of a sudden now you're going, who am I? And here's the questions. Who am I? What do I believe in? What values should I live by? What do I want to do with my life? When you're asking those questions after the death of a spouse, the problem then is your identity was in your marriage partner or in that relationship. Remember, what's our relationship? We are Christian. We're a child of God first. I'm a child of God. I belong to Him. He is mine. I'm His. He's mine. And I like it that way. Amen? Yeah. And then here's one I had a little problem with for a while, but I got over it real soon. And that's the old empty nest. When my boys grew up and got out, when all you youngins grow out of the house and you lose, here you go. Who am I? What do I believe in? What values should I live by? You start asking those questions. You start going through identity crisis. Then your identity was it being a parent. You know what? I learned quickly. Just go ahead and rejoice. Because they're going to leave. But I promise you they're coming back. I promise you they're coming back and they're bringing more with them. Okay? And if you feed them, they will come. All right. So. That's good. Stephen, he's your boy. Okay. Well, you know what? Well, that's right. So the emptiness, my life, part of my responsibility and part of my calling from God was to raise my children. But my identity was not a parent. My identity was a child. My responsibility was to raise these children. And so sometimes, now I'm going to tell you what, though, the best thing that ever happened was grand youngins. Grand youngins are a reward for not killing your youngins. They're also revenge, that's right. That's exactly right. So, and my grandbabies are so cool. They say, Papa, could I have some chocolate? Sure. But Daddy, it's 9 o'clock at night. That's okay. That's okay. They're going home with you. Here. You know. Oh, my grandyoungers used me. It's a happy, yeah. Sunday, when we left here Sunday, and I went to eat with Daniel and Michelle and Emmy and Anna Lane. And then they said they were going to the park. Well, I went home and brought Linda some lunch. I come back, and I went and sit there at the park, and they were leaving. They were going to Walmart. I had to go to Walmart. So we got in there. And so Emmy's over there helping me pick out the stuff I'm picking out that I had to buy. And then she's trying. She said, Papa. I said, what? She said, will you buy me a toy? And I said, sure. She said, well, let's go. And I said, no, we got to go pick up Anna Lane first. I said, no, then it hit me on the way over. Oops. I said, we got to ask your mama first. So she walked and said, Mama, can we have a toy? And she said, if Pawpaw's buying. And I said, I'm buying. But the big mistake was trying to get them there, to get them to pick out their toys. So I actually psyched out Emery. There was a little thing of sea monkeys there. And she said, see a little microscope on the side of those sea monkeys? They're going to be looking all kinds of ways. She says, I think they get pawpaw. I said, well, I don't know. You got to look through that glass to see them. She said, they look really like monkeys. I said, they look like seahorses. She said, they could be fun. I said, sure. I said, I got what I want. And Anna Lane picked up everything on the aisle. Yeah, but we come back and I paid for it and I started to walk away and then Mama said, Paul, can we have the receipt, please? I said, why? She said, because I don't want to walk out the store with these toys. So I said, well, Mama, if anybody gets caught without a receipt, it'll be me, but that'll be all right. I'll give them some receipt. But remember, kids, grandkids are awesome. So the empty nest, you know what the best thing, the best cure for empty nest is parents just getting a chance to get reacquainted with each other and have fun together and find out that life's not over, it's just beginning again. It really is. I found that life was enjoyable. I was having a good time. I really, really was, and I was really having a good time. And then Bethany came back a few months ago. Yeah. And she came back, bless her heart. But now she's gone again. I hope she stays gone for at least a year. And y'all know what I'm talking about. I'm not saying stay gone for us. I'm going to stay at that rehab for a year. Hope she gets to stay there. Okay. So remember, my role, or I'm not identified as a parent. A parent is my calling. Okay, it's my calling. My job is my calling. If I lose a spouse by death or divorce, here's what I tell people all the time. They say, well, I don't think I can go on without them. But here's what I tell them, especially if it's a divorce. I tell them this, divorce or death. I tell them if it's a divorce, I don't think I can go on without them. And here's what I tell them. God knows that they're not going where he's taking them. If they're not going where he's taking you, then trust God to take care of both of them. Right? So now, a move from a secure environment with your friends and your family, a relationship. Now you've lost your friends and your family. You're not with them. And now you've lost your identity because, again, your identity was in a relationship. I love my friends. I love my family. You can pick your friends. You can't pick your family. Linda is Italian, and I'm redneck Indian. And they said we were going to have a family reunion, so Linda's family can't have a family reunion because of the witness protection program. And my family is going to have a family reunion as soon as the parole board is. So now, your identity is not your friends and your family. Again, some people come in your life and they stay in your life for a lifetime. Some people only stay in your life for a moment. But every one of them affects your life for a lifetime. Remember that. Every one of them affects your life for a lifetime. So because they affect your life for a lifetime, God, let me learn the lessons that I need to learn. Again, some people are not going where you're going. If they're not going where God's taking me, then I don't need them there because it's going to cause a hindrance. Exactly. When God told Abraham, I want you to go into Canaan, who did he pull with him when he told him not to take it? I mean, you go. He carried Lot. Caused problems. Okay? Also disability. Can't do what you used to could do. Now, the older I get, the better I was. And there's things I can't do that I used to could do. Ease. I can't do so much of these anymore. I was working out the other day, and there was this older guy beside me, and he only had like the weights. You pull it out and put the weights, And so it's the butterfly, and he's only got like three up there. And he's doing this. He's going. Whoa, whoa. I get there and put it all the way down. I got 150 pounds on. I'm doing this. I'm going. I feel so good. And then I walk into another room where the machine is, where you can do the bench press. And there's another guy older than me, and I'm thinking, the other guy made me feel good about myself because he only had three and I had 150. And I get over there, and that guy's over there, older than me, and he's got like 100, 200 pounds. He's going. And I said, whoa. So he crawls out from underneath, and I'm thinking, he's through. He throws more weights on it. Crawls back under. And I said, God, please let him be through. He throws more weights on it. And I said, when he got through, he's wiping off. I said, Hoss, are you through yet? I said, I'd call you sir or Hoss or something. He said, yeah. He said, I'm a little rusty. So I waited till he left. Yes. Now, it was me, though. I can't remember. I think I worked out with like 100 pounds. I just went ahead and worked out. I did like 10 reps, incline, lay down, and only 100 pounds. But there was another machine that went up to 210 pounds. It was a push press instead of a bench press. And Bethany's boyfriend was coming in. And so I put it on as far as it could go. And I saw him walking in the door. I pushed that thing all the way out. By the time he got to me, I said, 50. Boom. And then I said, you want to work out with me, buddy? He said, I know. That was wisdom. That weren't mean. That was wisdom. Okay. So again, remember, God already knew what you could do. God knows. And just remember this, if there's something you cannot hear, what I've discovered about God, and you've discovered it too, if God allows you to lose something, he always replaces it with something else. Like guys that lose their sight, all of a sudden their other senses become so keen. Guys that lose their hearing, other senses become so keen. So if God allows you to lose something, if you lose your strength, he's going to give it back to you another way. So don't sit back and go, again, who am I? What do I believe? Where's God in all this? Just say, God, okay, if this is taken away from me, obviously you got something else in mind. Help me see it. That prevents identity crisis. And then the loss of an intimate friendship. A real good friend. Either they've done you wrong or they just left or they died. You know, if they leave or you don't get, something happens there, and all of a sudden, here you go again. You start doubting God and doubting everything, and you're getting ready to go in an identity crisis. You've got to be careful because I am what? A child of God. No matter if I'm disabled, I'm a child of God. If I lose my job, I'm a child of God. If my spouse dies, I'm a child of God. If I have a divorce, I'm still a child of God. Empty nest, I'm a child of God. I move from a secure environment, I'm still a child of God. Onset disability, I'm a child of God. Financial loss. A lot of times people, their financial loss, and when they get that financial loss, all of a sudden they begin to think, well, people are going to look down on them because they don't have the money they once had. And you find out, actually, sometimes it's the best thing that could ever happen to you. Because now you've stopped trusting your money and you started trusting God. Do I have any power to help myself now that success has driven from me, has been driven from me? That's Job talking. Here's some more versions. Is it not that I have no help in myself and that wisdom is quite driven from me? Or do you think I can pull myself up by my bootstraps? Well, I don't have any bootstraps. He's lost it all. I can tell you, my wife died. I thought I had lost it. But you know what? God showed me power and anointing. God showed me something I'd never seen before. And so I learned, I wouldn't go through it again, I wouldn't wish on anybody, but what I learned from it, I would not trade for anything. Here's one here, this is kind of tight, but I want you to watch it now. And again, none of this stuff I'm talking about is from a judgmental point of view. This is from a, why would this happen? Or is this what happened? Or could this happen? This is what this is. All right. This identity crisis can be severe. Be a severe form of identity confusion from childhood drama or trauma or sexual abuse. Loss of sexual identity. This has been a big thing lately because of the bathroom deal here in North Carolina and because of what the running platform now for some of the candidates. But again, that loss of sexual identity. Rejecting your God-given sexuality. This isn't always what does it, but this has a lot to do with it. And I've noticed over the years that a child that was in trauma or sexual abuse, they were either very reclusive or they were very sexually open. When I got my little, when I got Bethany, I already told you, Bethany was molested by her stepfather. And they told me when I got her that when I had to take that class, I had to go to classes to get her. And when I went to classes, they told us, said 50% of these kids wind up in jail. And they said a bigger part of them have become very sexually aggressive. And when they told me all that, then I started going back and thinking about people I knew earlier in my life. And once I found out the abuse they'd gone through, it all of a sudden opened up a whole new avenue where I used to feel bad about that person. I quit feeling bad about that person and started praying for that person. Because I understood then it's because of that childhood trauma that they had been through that was causing this problem. So, of course, Bethany was very reclusive. And even when I went to go see her for the first time, y'all heard the story, but I went to see her for the first time. She was 4 years old. This happened when she was two. And again, it happened when she was four. I was her seventh dad. I come in, they said, no man can touch her. No man can even talk to her. Very few of the foster mothers can have anything to do with her. She's just away from everybody. When we walked in the room, they said, we know kids love you, but this time you got to understand, don't be disappointed. And there was the social worker and the foster mom, and there was Beverly, and they went and sat down, and I walked in, and Bethany was hiding, 4 years old. And when she saw me, she ran. Jumped in my arms and hugged my neck and said, my big daddy, don't let anything happen. And everybody just started crying, and we didn't know what was going on, you know, because everybody's got to tell me, she's not going to come to you. And she's been like that ever since. You know, you see her, she's hung with daddy. You know what I'm saying? She hangs right with me. Good, bad, or ugly, she's hanging. Right with daddy. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. That's right. Exactly. You're right. I've learned a long time ago, judgment, you do not judge people. Do not judge people. You love them. You love them. If they're not like you, it doesn't matter. Love them because God loves them. God loves them. And if God loves that person, then who am I? And not only that, but I found out too that if I love a person, wow. I had an uncle that was an alcoholic, a severe alcoholic. And he used to pick on me all the time. He said, I rode by your church today, and I saw y'all were having homecoming, and I saw you up dancing in the mashed potatoes. Yeah, he would do stuff like that. He was always picking on me, and one day, I got to where I couldn't take it anymore, and I'd see him all the time, because everybody would hang out at Daddy's house, at Daddy's barn, garage. And so, I just got to where I was mad, and I got around him, I was mad. And one day he said, you know what, your religion is your crutch. And I said, no, Jesus holds me up. I said, but alcohol is your crutch. And the Holy Spirit checked me. And then the Lord spoke to me and said, you're never going to win this man to God. You're too busy fighting. You're judging him. Try loving him. And so over the next few months, he'd say things and I'd smile. He'd start doing things and I'd still just go love on him. One day I went out there to Daddy's, and he come up and he said, can I talk to you? And I said, can you talk to me? I thought he was going to talk some more junk. He says, no, really, can I go to your house and talk to you in private? I said, okay. So I walked into the house with him, and he told me, he said, if I ever get right with God, I want to be like. And he said, I just had a big fight with my son. And he said, I'm not sure he's ever going to come back. He said, it was bad. It was really bad. What do I do? And so we talked for an hour. And we prayed. And he went home. And about 30 minutes later, I got a phone call from my aunt. And she said, "What have you done?" And I said, "What have I done? I've done nothing." Yeah, I said, "I've done nothing to your husband." She says, "No." He said, "He left a broken man. He come back happy. He's talking about God." He said, "My son came up and said, for the first time I can remember, he went out in the yard and hugged him and kissed him and said, they are having a time. What did you do to my husband?" And I said, it wasn't me. It was God. I'm just a messenger. God did it. She came to the house, went in the back room with my wife, and she accepted Jesus Christ as her Savior. And when it come time when he died, his special request was for me to do his funeral. And so I did, and the boys sang at it because he wanted the boys to sing. But it was, again, the Lord told me, you'll never win him as long as you're fighting. Oh, yeah. And a lot of times, if you're not careful, if you're working in it, you can bring some of this stuff home. You can also get yourself caught up in it yourself. It's so easy when you're working with people like that. You know, I've seen pastors talking all grades of junk. Next thing I know, they're coming to me going, "Help." I'm going, "What's wrong?" And the same thing they were fighting against. Now they're trying to fight, or Christians, not just pastors, Christians, they've got it latched onto themselves. And so you've got to be careful. You've got to be, you're right, you're one decision away. One decision. And that's why I try to live one decision at a time. You know, I like to play chess, and I'll try to have two or three ahead. You know, I try to keep ahead, but still, you know, and I tell my boys that too. But DC, bless his heart, DC, when he went to open his own business, said, "Daddy, I sure would like to have these big old contracts." And I said, "DC, if you remember what I taught you when I was your football coach," he said, "Why'd you tell me that?" I said, "All I want you to do is make 2 yards, 2 to 3 yards a carry. That's it. That's it. If you do that, you'll stay on the field." And he goes, "Really?" That's playing football. So then we started working. So he was getting his little jobs. And the other day, bless his heart, the other day, I got a picture of it. He built a Family Dollar store, a General Dollar store in Mooresville. I went to him and said, "You know, that couple of feet at a time, a couple of yards at a time." "Uh-huh." He said, "Yeah, Dad, you're right." I said, "Yeah." I said, "You just keep on and let God bless you. Honor him and God will bless you. You honor him. Keep him first, and God will bless you." Bizarre dressing, cross dressing, you know, taking on a different identity as to feel significant. So when I see that going on, again, I realize there's been some kind of traumatic thing in their life. Now, the worst I've ever had asked me, ever, was I was hit detention center. And I'd been witnessing to this guy and ministering to him. And he called me over one night and he said, "Can I talk to you?" I said, "Sure." He says, "Can I talk to you? I need to talk to you. I need to talk." I said, "We'll talk to you." He said, this is heavy duty. So I mean, I've got to get ready because we're talking about this. This is heavy duty. He said, "Why does God hate you?" I said, "God doesn't hate you." He says, "No, God hates you." And I said, "Why do you say God hates you?" He said, "Because I don't know if I'm a man or a woman." And I said, "Why don't you know if you're a man or a woman?" He says, "Because I have no plan." Much like it when you get back in a corner, man, with the heavy duty stuff. I mean, that's the heaviest thing I've been hit with in a while. You know, And I asked him, I said, well, why didn't somebody do something about it when you were younger? He's 30 years old. I said, why didn't somebody do something about it when you were younger, like your parents? Go ahead and have a surgeon help you out while you're little. You don't even know what's going on. He said, they said they wanted me to decide myself. I'm 30 years old, and I don't know. All I could tell him was, I said, with all the chemicals in the air and all this stuff going on and all the transmitted diseases and stuff, birth defects do happen because of that. And I told him, I said, but all of this, I want you to remember God loves you. He loves you. He really loves you. You got to know that. I gave some scriptures, and I said that when you get out of here, I said, you need to consider praying about it, but he was very offended. I said, you need to pray about it, but then you need to go have something done about it. He said, I plan to. And I said, well, just know this. God does it. Just when you think you've heard heavy duty enough, you know. So, when I see stuff like that going on now, I know there's been some kind of trauma or sexual abuse going on. Victim mentality. That's probably the number one. Number one. God tells us to guard our hearts. And when you get the victim mentality, you don't guard your heart. Guarding your heart means that you've got your defenses up, so you can't be hurt easily. What I've discovered is people don't just guard their heart, they block their heart. They put up a wall. And then they become a victim. And because they've got a wall up, they're not communicating with other people. And Satan is filling their head full of how they're a victim, how they're a victim, how they're a victim. And so they feel powerless in relationships. And something I also discovered about a victim mentality, sometimes a victim mentality, because the walls go up, people perceive them not as they're having a victim mentality in their head, but they don't understand that people perceive them as having a villain mentality. You perceive them as villains because they put up the wall. They won't talk. They push them away. They push people away. So all of a sudden now they're villains. And actually they're not villains. They think they're victims. Again, childhood trauma, sexual abuse, maybe just not having a chance to work with their parents like they want to. All right, and then dissociative orders. It's like amnesia. I talk to people all the time that can't remember their childhood. Can't remember. What happened? I don't know. What was going on when you were 12? I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah, well, so when people do that in their childhood, I mean, when they have a childhood being abused or something else, to get also I'm trying to pronounce this word, the starting life over with a new identity. It's like they become somebody different. I heard about somebody yesterday that actually had throat surgery, mouth surgery, throat surgery. They had, tell me, say it. You, I can't say it right. Okay. Well, I haven't studied that one as heavy as I want to get, but I was going to tell you something. Is the lady had her throat operated on, and she woke up. She had just a southern accent like we do. She woke up with a British. Yeah. No. I cracked my skull, and I know. When I was 13, I cracked my skull, and I was unconscious for 2 weeks. And when I come to, my arm was paralyzed for a month, and I couldn't walk for several months. I had learned how to use my hand over again, learned how to use my head again. And y'all, how many know Joey Roberts? He's at BCS. He's Frank's supervisor. Joey Roberts, they put him in my class. They sat behind me because my memory was gone for 6 months. I couldn't remember. You can tell me your name. I could forget it. But he sat behind me. And he didn't cheat. He didn't give me answers. But he just kept, when we were studying, he would, the Lord used him to help me. You know, if it hadn't been for him, if I'd have been sitting there by myself, I'd have never made the eighth grade. I mean, it was bad. So again, starting with new identity, and then multiple personality disorder. Adopting two or more personalities is the way of coping with life. I've known people like that. I actually did not know this. I married a couple, and when she got pregnant, he left. Said he was going to go find work. And he left. And I was going to give this fictitious name. Say his name was Sam. And I said, she said, can you help me? Sam's gone. I don't know where he's at. And I said, I don't know where he's at either. And I don't understand why he left when you're pregnant. So he comes back, tells her where he's at, and then he turned around and said, watch this. She says, Tom says, I said, Tom, I had to say it. She said, oh, I forgot to tell you. Then said, they left that one out when they were talking. And look, it's a, now I know, so there was Tom, there was Sam, and then there was Henry. She married Sam. No, not right. She married Sam, yes, and they don't necessarily know what he was doing. Right. And so Sam left, Tom came back, and then Henry left again. I just told her, I said, I just said, yeah, that's what I said. He needs medicine. He needs medicine. He needs a psychiatrist. He needs medicine. And she said, and honestly, if she knew all that before she married him and then got pregnant with his baby, she needs more medicine than he does. Bipolar is just kind of like moody kind of deal. This is different. These are distinct personalities. Distinct. Well, I did. Finally. A manic depressive person will get you and a bipolar person, but this is different. This is the distinct, very distinct, very distinct. It goes with amnesia, and there's also one more, and you brought that up, and I forgot to put it up there. I'm glad you said so. That's spiritual identity, because usually if somebody's going through a crisis, they doubt their relationship with God, or they think they're not worthy of God, or God doesn't love them. It's like that guy from D Block. I ministered to him for 2 or 3 months. And I told some of the other chaplains and other counselors that and I said, well, what would y'all say? Said, we don't know. We probably said something you said. I just couldn't deal. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I don't know how to handle that part. I know how to handle that God loves me. Spiritual identity. Who am I in God? Why did God allow this to happen? Why do I need to believe in Him anymore? He's going to let this happen to me? He's going to let me be abused like this? And what values should I live by? Again, do I really want Him in my life because I fell through these things? My boys, when their mama died, they kind of went in the spiritual identity crisis. They didn't go to church for quite some time, and they were in church active, very active. And when their mama died, they were not in church. They didn't go to church for years. And Daniel started going a little bit. And D.C. just, he went to Tennessee. And then he came back, and he just stayed on the road for years in that country, man. And eventually, the Lord started calling him back in. Of course, we know the product. See it every Sunday night. But it was bad when the mama died, it was bad. And again, why would God let my mama die? She's only 38. And a school teacher. Why would God let my mama die? And I kept saying, fellas, you gotta trust God. And I remember when a month later when that uncle died that I called him. That I was talking about. A month later he died. And he wanted the boys to play. And of course, since then, this has been played a lot. But they said, this was awesome, this part. I was walking through the house. My aunt said, I need a non-spiritual, temporary song to play at your tune. And I said, well, what do you want? She said, I don't know. I said, what do you mean by non-spiritual? Tell me. She said, just some contemporary. I said, what? She said, I don't know. And so I'm walking through the house, and DC and Daniel, they always had a bunch of girls. They were there playing, and DC was playing the electric guitar, Daniel's playing the acoustic, and they were playing Simple Man, singing. So I said, hey, fellas, can y'all do that acoustic? And they started doing acoustic, and singing back and forth. And so I got my hand on the phone, and I said, listen to this. And she started crying, she said, I want it. So I walked over and told my daddy and all his brothers, said, we got a song. They said, why? I said, Simple Man. My daddy said, you're not playing rock and roll at my brother's funeral. I said, Daddy, this is not rock and roll, this is Bible. If you're playing any genre. He said, you're still not playing it. I said, well, his wife said yes. He says, well, we say no. I said, well, we all need to listen. And so the boys started playing it. And my daddy and all his brothers started crying and said, please play it. Have an identity crisis. And so, but since then, DC and Annie went in to play. They played Amazing Grace, they played the piano, and they played Simple Man. And when we walked out, DC and Danny were at the car crying. I told them, I said, this will be therapy. I know your mom has only been dead for a month, but this will be therapy. They walked out and said, Dad, I want you to call therapy. That's not therapy. And DC did not go to another funeral for years. The next time he went to a funeral was Danny Ross. He went to sacrifice. And then Daniel went back. And so then they started going back to church. And then they started really getting into it again. And now they see, he's always got his ideas. He's really thinking about how all we can do to make things better. And stuff. But right to start with, a spiritual identity. It was tough. I told Bethany was an abused child. She was the most severely abused child. When we got her, and it was bad. And Bethany, when she was coming up, she would stop and she'd just start talking. And she started talking about the abuse. I pulled her off I-95 and talked to her. Just talk. I let her talk. And then I'd say, I just want you to know something. You're special. so special. But God chose you not only to be born in this family and then to live. God chose, God allowed us to pray for you. And Mary's tell her that other Lucy and Daniel were born, they were born, they come from inside. Yes, but she said, I won't come from your inside, I won't come from your inside. And she said, well, you did. Come on. And so we went through a lot with her, but every chance I got, I still special. I know you've been through problems, but what I have discovered, and your daughter will discover, is your biggest disappointments, your biggest scars are all up here, your biggest points of pain. And losing my wife, my mom, glad that I got a chance, really got a chance to minister to people because I've been through that. And the boys now, DC and Daniel, have helped more people, and they've gone through losses of their mother. Thanks to the ways they see it, God has helped us out. And I told them that God has a bigger purpose. And Psalm 139, 13 to 14, it says, in the NIV, in my mother's womb, you knit me. Knit. If you're going to knit something, first you got to have it. So every last one of us here, is there anything in here any one of us can change or feel about for us? No. Would you change your hair color? Would you give yourself some hair? How old is she? I understand. That's awesome. Open her eyes. Oh, I had to tell Bethany. I had to reassure Bethany. DC and Daniel, I had to reassure them when their mother died. Do you think? All right, here's what the Lord told me. Somebody asked me, where was God? Yes. Yes, it was bad. Where was God when I was there? And I said the same place he was, but he said, and so they asked, where was God when Mama died? On the throne, in control. He knew best. And now Daniel, DC and Daniel, Bethany, my daughter, and I've got two stepchildren now. So I got five. They're all different. And they all can drive me crazy. When they gang up on me to drive me crazy, it really gets bad. But I just kept driving, and Bethany said, I'm driving it in right now. Right now, she's in rehab. She's in rehab. She moved out of the house. Before she got to be 25, she'd already been there. I told her to leave me. She said, I don't know what I'm doing. Next thing I know, she's on the phone. She was just beautiful. Yeah, never used the bird to take stuff everywhere. She didn't even know it. And so she got out of that. But then she went wrecking the car. She went, messed up the probation. The other girl went to prison. She did. She messed up the probation. And so now she's in this place called Husbands. Every day to her, every day, I tell her, you know, tell her, because I don't have to lie. I can't explain to her why a grown man would abuse her and why another grown man would abuse her stepfather. I can't explain it to her. All I can say is, I'm your dad. But it will not happen. And remember, it's not going to happen. But I can tell her every time you're beautiful, so all the time you're beautiful, you know. God doesn't make junk. It's just a constant thing. I have to be assured. Every now and then she picks it up and runs with it. Trying to pump. And then all of a sudden the pump goes dry. And then you got to prime that pump again. Lisa and Daniel, we just took them. They were 17 and 19. Mama died. That was 10. And so DC and Daniel just had to work through it. But they were all over the place. Again, I reassured them. I was constantly reassuring them. But Bethany was a whole different guy. Because of what she brought with her. She brought a lot of baggage. A lot of it. Yeah. Never get over any loss. Right. When you go back in and again, this is what I tell myself. No, alright. When I was 13, I cracked my skull. You really can't tail. No, really. I cracked this side of my skull, and from here to here is a big crack. Okay. And this arm was paralyzed because I damaged it, and this side was kind of messed up. I didn't know till years later. I was working at Procter & Gamble, and I had a lift truck that the ground strap was not touching the ground, and so it would shock you if you weren't. And so I was getting up, and they kept shocking my foot right there. And I said, why is it shocking my foot? So I looked at this shoe, and it was fine. I looked at this shoe, and the sole was gone. And that's when I realized I was gone. From that. I dragged my foot the other day. I was walking, my feet were hurting. That foot especially, my feet were hurting. I pulled up the shoe, and I took it down, and I could take my finger and stick it through the sole of the shoe. Not this one. That one. So here we go again. So they got me another pair of shoes. Okay. When I got in the wreck, it tore part of my face skin off, from here all the way to here. And they kept putting cloths on it and trying to work on it so they couldn't see the scar. Well, the Lord used something. Never even knew they were there. I did not even know the scars were there. The first time I tried to grow a beard, I noticed a whole ear and no hair. And a whole ear and a whole back. I was going for part time at that moment. Trying to grow a beard, and I got these places where no hair is growing. He said, why have I got these places where no hair is growing? And the Lord spoke to me and said, again, that's from that motorcycle. And you were supposed to be dead or be totally a vegetable. And instead, you're not. You know? And so the scars were there to show me. So I learned something. Scars were out there to show me the damage. Scars were there to show me the things. So think about it that way. If you could tell her scars are not to show her where things are damaged, show her a thing and just tell her she's got some unique ministry she can minister. Because you know what, people, unless you got extra money, my wife's got it right here, and it drives her up the absolute wall. Sometimes she's and of course, I can't minister somebody with eczema. I don't know about eczema. You know, my wife now has got fibromyalgia. It's like, can we just keep adding things to it? You know. But again, I ministered to people with fibromyalgia, but I never really understood it until my wife died. Now I really, really understand. She'd be good today and tomorrow she's out of it. You know, or then she's up and down and you know, it's just crazy mess. But again, people don't go after the right stuff. They go after the different stuff. Okay? Think about it. John Wayne, he was different. A lot of cowboy actors, but John Wayne was different. Clint Eastwood, different. Go ahead. Yeah. I mean, if Clint Eastwood weren't so bad, he weren't such so awesome in Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox would have died in that street, like Back to the Future 3, because he wouldn't known to put that thing up underneath him. So, but the point I'm trying to make is, with your daughter, you just tell her there's something to do. But honestly, God chose her for the future. Hey, I keep telling the boys stuff like that. Tell them, Bethany, you can talk to people. You can talk to people who've been through abuse. You can talk to people who've been through multiple families. You can talk to people like this. And part of the reason why she's in Dove's Nest, I believe, is because of stuff happened in the back. But they told me they've never seen somebody bounce back so fast, so far, good from what she had been through. And that's because the environment she was in was still a hurt. If your daughter will get in her head, get in her spirit, this is going to set her up for you. Still don't like it. I don't like the ministry. I mean, I've ministered. Right now, I have ministered to more people lost their lives. You know what? I get with them, and they'll go, and I hear them go, and they go, you wouldn't have any idea how I feel. I said, really? I said, I know I don't. I don't know how you feel, but I can tell you how. Felt when my wife died. And you go, whoa. Your wife died? Yeah, she was 38. You go, well, tell me about it. Tell me about it. Oh, yeah, beautiful. So, tell me about it. Then to start this. Oh, yeah, you were something. But again, you got nothing. I don't know if that's any help or anything, but I would just honestly do it. You try to do it. Lisa and Daniel said, oh, Dad, you just throwing those preachers like that. Like, just all that. People think Linda, because she goes to work in the daytime, she's fine, but they don't understand that she goes to work, comes home, hits the couch, goes from the couch to the bed, and sleep. And on Saturday, she sleeps sometimes till 5 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and Sunday, and a lot sleeping on Sunday till 4 or 5 o'clock, you know, and when she feels like it, she's here. When she's having us, and she had a flare up this week, a bad flare up. And her mom and daddy, you know, like her mom and daddy, seeing this, and said, Linda didn't, here it goes again, Linda didn't want me to have to be stuck helping her mama and daddy. And I said, I'm not stuck. She said, but you've already been through with your mama, you know, and trying to take care of her, and your daddy's moved away. And I said, how about do this? I had a granddaddy with Alzheimer's. I said, now your mama's got it. I said, how about look at it this way? My mom was gone, so look at it as you're sharing your mom with me. And I go by whenever I can, if I'm at the hospital, I'll go by and check on them. You know, and just say, how y'all doing? Need any help? They got anything you need? And then I'll just stay 5 minutes. And I'm gone. You know, it's good stuff going in there. If they need something, they tell me. You know, I wind up fixing the sink for them. He had hernia surgery, 84 years old, had hernia surgery. The next day, I go to his house, and the Lord's always done this. It's amazing. The last 3 catastrophes he had, I went up to his house to check on him as he's getting fixed up. He had 6 to 10 inches of water. Now, I fixed it, and I didn't prop up where I should have because it was a temporary fix. He called it a plumber because he said it would aggravate me. The plumber did exactly what I did. Matter of fact, the plumber looked at my job and said, that's fine. He just propped it up underneath. I said, $300. And he tore a wall out. And so I put the wall back up. I'd already fixed the problem. All he did was prop up underneath it. And I'm thinking, he got $300. You know, I didn't want to get anything. I didn't want anything. I didn't mean it that way. I'm saying, he got $300, but I did the work. And he tore up a wall that I had to put back together. You know, but again, you know, I tell them all the time, and I go when I see her mom and dad, I call them back. You know, and I'll say, help you, like, do the help. And so again, it's just this honor, it's a privilege to be able to help. But again, you look at something like that, as I've been there, done that, I don't mind doing it. One of them got help. It's therapy. You have to go through therapy, and you have to have a qualified psychiatrist for therapy and medicine and all kinds of stuff. And so, he was isolated. Well, I can tell you a little bit more about that. But he was by himself. They isolated him, and they did. He was just pitiful. He cried and cried and cried and cried. And it was something. So, any more questions? Any more examples or anything you want to say? Pastor, you got anything? Love. That's right. No. You gotta love it. Yeah. You're right. And so I have made it a point to not be judgmental. And again, I know I have some people come up to me that go through some kind of struggle like this and say, thank you for that. I said, it's not my fault. Right, there's a lady at work that found, she was from Columbia. She'd go, I'd say, see, the clean lady, I'd say, can you come clean up by my desk over here? Can you go over here and clean up over there? And she'd go, not my yacht, mom. And so with Linda now, Linda, she'll pick it, she'll go, I'll say something, she'll go, not my yacht, mom. It's not our job. It's not our job to judge. It's our job to begin to love. If Jesus were that woman in Samaria, you could kind of compare the stuff a little today with the woman in Samaria because they were considered dogs. And even the Jew, a respectable Jew, would walk around Samaria. He'd take the extra trip to walk around Samaria and say that he would go to be exposed to these filthy people. But Jesus went right there. He went right over there and said, I got to go. No. That's right. That's why I told a couple they were sitting there one day having a fight. I said, you're going to have to love each other. I said, I don't love them more. I said, obviously love them more. Christ. We're to love people. Then we're called to love them. We got to show grace. If we don't show grace, yeah, it does. Abraham Lincoln was asked when they were rebuilding the South. Abraham Lincoln rebuilding the South. They said, "Shouldn't the army to destroy our enemies?" And Abraham Lincoln said, "When I make them my friends, I'm going to destroy them." Oh, yeah, because he's told me some stories that would make your... He didn't tell me all the stories, but he told his brothers. His brothers told me some stories. That, you know, I'm glad that I haven't had to make that decision. Really. Yeah. One of them, I said, Danny, he was an undercover drug officer, and the Mother Mary, attached to Mother Mary, means I've got drugs for sale. I said, son, why did you put Mother Mary in the bag? I mean, it's... And they told him when he went to Afghanistan, you better wear shorts. I mean, you better wear long pants, because they will cut your legs. They see that. They will kill you. They will kill you, cut your legs off and kill you, so he had to wear long pants. But he also wore a turban and he wore all kinds of stuff. What I was going to say is, though, he's got the Knight Templar. Did you ever see this one right here? Knight Templar. That was what all the guys in his unit had. And so that was a tattoo from Afghanistan. I said, son, I wouldn't trust him in Afghanistan to put a tattoo on you. And they'll tell him what you got. And he got sick when he come home. Remember, all of y'all remember this, huh? He spent a whole week in the cardiovascular unit in Greenville. And they never figured out what was wrong with him. I just thought he got some food cancer. Oh, yeah. But he's got that Knight Templar back here. In D.C., if you look at D.C., his mother's favorite song, movie was, his mother's favorite movie was Wizard of Oz. Her favorite song was Somewhere in the Rainbow. We played it every time. But D.C. has the sleeve here of the Wizard of Oz. And you'll see the beaver slippers. You'll see the stuff there. That's the dollar. Right. Well, Daniel asked me, you know, how hot it gets here on Sunday morning. Sometimes Daniel said, Daddy, it was like that day with 107 degrees. Daniel said, Daddy, can I wear shorts? And I said, he said, it's up to you, son. You figure it out. Yeah, so he came in. He come in here and he said, Dad, some of the ladies all of them are going to move. I had tattoos in my head. And I told him, I said, well, son, you know, you got them up there, you might as well show them. You know, I said, when you got legs pretty mine, you ain't got to put tattoos on them. I just never understood why he put Mother Mary up there. Because, like I said, that in the Mexican, I think it's the Mexican, one of the Mexican drug cartels, it's the sign that you have drugs. And I understand you're a drug. He's undercover. They would drop him off on 4th Street and 5th Street in Greenville. He walked down the street and he would buy his stuff. Then he'd come back with drugs and get somebody over here. It was crazy. Their whole way they did things was crazy. This is a funny story. He said they were trying to sting a guy. And they said, and they had an old van, an old beat up Chevrolet van. Daniel drove it up in Yarwood at a Washington. I said, Daniel, why do you got an old raggedy Chevrolet van in my brother's car? He said, Daddy, this thing drives up in your yard. You're going to have a bad day. And I said, what do you mean? He said, come here. You have him in the back. And inside, it didn't look like that. And also, there was something there called Pac-Pac. He said, picked it up and it was a and like a bazooka, and it had a piece of metal that would go back and forth inside of it. And he said, it takes two guys to hold it, to put knock a door down. And so then they went to the room where they had water, one of them went to the door down. And in Afghanistan, they didn't worry about any of that. In Afghanistan, they shot the windows of the door. But still, they said they were riding downtown, they were trying to get a guy, and it said something blew the cover or something. And so the guy's on the side of the street watching. He's lighting up a joint. This is funny. So the man's on the side of the street, and he's lighting up a joint, and they come by with the van. And when they come by the van, they open the door, and they snatch him and put him right in the van and shut the door and keep on going. I said, can you imagine that guy thinking, what kind of high I'm on now? Because he goes, we cut that part out. Cut that part out. Yeah. That's the bonus feature. But I won't say anything else. I'll leave it alone. Okay. Yes. Your son was doing it. My son was doing it. I thought your son was crazy. I knew mine was. Yeah. But you know what? But you know what I did find out, though, is that the brotherhood, those guys, their little brotherhood they had, he was actually safer there than he was as a road deputy. Because a road deputy goes with it, hands down. You go to gun and load me a gun and cock and all this, but you go in with what he did, you went in every place with a gun and cock, ready to go, and all you guys were there and they had your back. Yeah, he was the short one. Yeah. He was the first one in the door. So you're gonna delete it? Please delete that. That last part. Anybody any more questions, answers? If you ever want to see something, like go talk about this stuff right here, go do a prison ministry. You'll see it. I mean, you'll see it. I mean, see it. Right in your face. Mm-hmm. That's right. You're there. I was right with you. And as God would have it, that guy has never been out of his cell. See, we're over in D block, has cells downstairs and cells upstairs. These guys are locked in 8x8 for 23 hours a day. They get 1 hour out. Usually, depends on what shift's on, when we come in, they make them go back in for us to minister to them. But this shift, I tell them, I'm not scared of these guys. Let them stay out. And so there was two guys. And when they come out, we got a chance to go in, and this guy, his son, had been killed in a kid, was it a car wreck? Run over. Yeah, he got run over in Greenville a couple of days,